League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening to I Think Not, the podcast that recaps all of your favorite true crime TV shows.
Even frogging, the source of all of our nightmares.
You can listen to all new crazy stories every week on Amazon Music.
That's right, where you can find our show, I Think Not, and all of your favorite podcasts. Thank you, Amazon Music, for hosting this nonsense.
Yeah, baby, beat that mug. Yeah, contour that face. Put a little blush on there.
I'm just powdering a little bit because the light bounces off this nine head.
I love your beautiful forehead, honey.
It's just because I have a very big brain and it needs some place to go.
Yeah, how do you explain your large breasts?
There's a lot of milk in it. You want to milk me?
Okay, on to the episode. On to start this now. Start the music, Rick, quickly.
Hello, friends, new and old, down bitches, new and old. Welcome to I Think Not, the podcast where Joey Taranto and me, Ellen Marsh, talk about our bodies. It is just, we shame our own bodies here. That's what we do.
Head, shoulders, knees and toes, knees and toes.
Did you ever hear that song? Do your ears hang low?
Do they waddle to and fro?
My dad, my father, the man whose DNA I share,
gross,
used to sing, do your boobs hang low? Do they waddle to and fro? Can you tie them in a knot? Yeah.
Is it waddle or wobble?
Wait, do your boobs hang low? Do they waddle? Do they waddle to and throw? Can you tie them in a knot?
Can you tie them in a bow?
Can you throw them over your shoulder like a continental soldier? Do your boobs hang low? My dad sang that. So if you ever wonder why I'm in therapy, you can just add that to the list.
That is disgusting. Also, I don't believe that those are the lyrics. It is wobble, not waddle.
Okay, baby, I'm wrong.
I just checked the internet, and the internet
so
said
glad.
Ellen is a liar.
Right. Well, I'm glad that you spend your time just proving me wrong. I think that's a great use of time.
You know what?
Time.
I don't think that that's very fair because I often admit when I am wrong, and that is often.
We're just kidding. This is not a podcast where we shame ourselves. We shame each other. And we also recap your favorite true crime TV shows. And we are coming to the end, my friends, of Killer Siblings. I am telling you, this show has held me in suspense and makes me look at siblings in a whole new way.
Like I said before, I'll say it again. I'll barely go to the Dunkin' Donuts for my siblings. I am not going to prison for you.
Yeah, if I needed something from my siblings, like an organ or something, I would definitely pick and choose which brother I would ask.
Yeah.
You know, like if I needed a liver, I would go to Joe because John drinks and Joe doesn't drink. So I'd be like, I want that good liver.
Liver alone.
If you would like more of me and Joey, you sure can find us over on Patreon. That is where we do our long form series. And right now we are covering Playboy Murders. And my friend, I am going to get in touch with Holly Madison. Mark my words. Holly Madison loves true crime. And I want to hear all about making this series because it is fascinating.
It is wild. I mean, just the statistics alone of playmates who are met with untimely deaths. I had no idea.
I know. When you were looking through all of your dad's old Playboys and all of his nudie magazines, you had no idea all these years later you would be covering it.
My dad didn't have Playboy magazine.
He did. He just locked it up with all of his childhood trauma.
How dare you? He's no longer with us. He didn't have Playboy magazines. He had Bibles.
All with the Playboy stuck in the middle. You can also find back episodes of some of our favorite series, including Frogging, Pink Collar Crimes, I Almost Got Away With It. We need to bring that on the main feed.
Yes, we do.
Just for you. We've got to bring it on the main feed, as well as some darker ones like Evil Lives Here.
Fry Thy Neighbor.
Fry Thy Neighbor. That one has given me nightmares for a very long time. So check it out. We have everything from $5 to $80. Whatever fits in your budget, we will make it happen. You also can get things like Swamp Talk, which is our monthly talk show, as well as some extras like movie nights and painting parties, which we have coming up on April 17th. And don't forget to come join us on tour. We still have some tickets left. If you are in Seattle or Tampa or where else, honey?
LA.
And then we've also announced, but not announced, dates for Indianapolis, Nashville, Atlanta, and
Raleigh.
There we go. We're going to be there. So make sure you're following us on social so that you keep up to date with all of that, as well as our nonsense, because we do throw a lot of nonsense in there, right, Joey?
You throw a lot of nonsense in there.
Oh, yeah, you blend. On to the episode. Season 3, Episode 5, The All Ridges.
There were a string of armed robberies and 3 murders happening in Southwest Fort Worth.
Somebody came up behind him and shot him in the head.
Then there's a second shooting at the Circle K.
To have 2 people shot execution style was very unusual.
I thought, oh my God, that sucker's gonna shoot me.
A call comes in with the Whataburger.
It was a gruesome, traumatic scene.
When someone takes a life, I don't know how you are supposed to forgive that.
One of the witnesses recognized the shooter.
There's 4 people involved, his brother and another set of brothers.
We had a serial event occurring.
We knew we had to do something quickly or more people were going to die.
Honey, guess where we are?
Well, we are in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah, listen, I am loving Texas right now. Texas is having a moment because Texas and all of the country music world is pressed that Beyoncé made a country song. Not only did she make a country song, it was number 1 on the country charts.
I'm so disconnected, I think, because I had no idea that that was a big controversy.
Oh, they are so mad. They're like, don't come for my guns, don't come for my country, and don't come from a country music. That's what they're saying. Everyone went crazy on the internet. They're so mad she made a country song.
Get over it.
This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no holding. I'm sorry, I think it's a bop.
Yeah, listen, I'm not a huge country music fan, but like, don't yuck people's yum. I love Kacey Musgraves.
I like country music. If it's fun music, I'm dancing to it. I'm singing to it. I like the younger country, the newer country, the pop country.
Man, I feel like a woman. Like
listen,
that?
Listen, as soon as I hear that bum, bum, ba-dum, bum, bum.
Let's go, girls.
I'm like, are we starting a riot tonight?
Yeah, you're literally
if we're rioting,
like,
I'm there.
Yeah, you're literally like, let's fucking go, girls.
Let's go. You girls, let's go. Did you just hear Shania? Let's go. She just said, let's go, girls.
Okay, let's get...
Where is everybody?
Well, like we said, we are in Fort Worth, Texas, and Detective Kurt Brannon wants to give you a little window into what this town is like.
Fort Worth was cow town. It was a big town, not a big city. And over the years, it's grown in population. It's adjacent to Dallas and really just tends to be one large metropolitan area.
This man sounds like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Hit it!
Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me.
That is so scary and so nightmare-inducing. I want to make it stop.
Yeah. I know, me too.
Listen, this cowboy is basically the blueprint for how I would think every man is in Texas. He is wearing a cowboy hat, a bolo tie, and 17 different shades of beige and brown with a handlebar mustache.
It's kind of sexy.
I kind of feel like every cowboy are made and created in the image of Kurt Brannon, right?
Listen, Ellen, save a horse, ride a cowboy, okay?
Oh, I will.
I rode several the other night.
Listen, oh, boy.
We are told that the southern part of Fort Worth is considered the deep south and mostly like hardworking middle class people and generally considered to be safe. But Officer John Good tells us that in the 80s, there was a rise in violent crime in this area.
Oof, to say the least. Buckle up, everyone. So it's January 13th, 1985.
Do you know what the number 1 movie of 1985 was?
Top Gun?
No. Think about it. It was turned into a Broadway musical.
Footloose?
No. That's early 80s.
Okay.
I'll give you a clue.
Great Scott!
Oh, Back to the Future. 1985. Of course, that is so dumb. 1.1 gigawatts.
Not
duck. What the heck's a gigawatt?
Not his mama having a crush on him. I only saw that movie for the first time a couple years ago.
Oh, that's a great movie. That solidified my crush on Michael J. Fox for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Now, wait. Do you know what the number one song of 1985 was?
Take my breath away.
No, that was Top Gun, and that was 86,
okay.
I believe.
DC, Hollywood, and the Sunset Strip, Novus. Okay. Was it Huey Lewis?
Nope. I'll give you a hint. It's a very, very famous saxophone-driven song.
Tonight the music seems so loud.
That's it.
I wish that we could lose this crowd. Baby, it's better this way. We hurt each other with the things we want to say.
Yes, Careless Whisper. When he was still with Wham, that's not George Michael on his own.
Okay, well, we are a true crime podcast, everyone. We're getting there.
On Sunday night, January 13th, 1985, at 11:30 p.m., Fort Worth Police Department gets a call that Krusty's Pizza on the south side, there's been a robbery shooting.
Actual serious conversation.
Yes.
I understand the double entendre of Krusty because it's like the crust of the pizza.
Mm-hmm.
But calling any food establishment Krusty is very questionable.
Listen,
I think of someone who's like crusty, like yucky.
I think you get an out when you are a pizza restaurant and you're naming it Krusty. Don't you want a good crust? You think of Krusty, you think crispy. Crispy crust.
Okay. Agree to disagree.
Fine.
So not only has there been a shooting, this shooting resulted in a casualty.
Yeah. So Detective Kurt arrives and he's told that the victim is in the back room of the pizza restaurant. And on the side, they also speak with the delivery guy who made that 911 call. But when they go to the back room, that is where they find a white male between the ages of 18 and 20 lying face up, and he had been shot just above his right ear.
Right, and they go into his pocket and retrieve his identification, and they find out that this is the body of 19-year-old Buddy Joe Webster. And it seemed he had been shot, obviously from behind, by surprise. It looked like he was sitting in a chair because the chair was fallen over to the side, and he had a pen right next to him. And when they looked on the table, he was sort of mid-sentence because the ink of the pen just kind of glided off the paper.
That's so eerie.
The description of that, exactly. It is so eerie. And just thinking of the last seconds of his life, it's really tragic. However, even though he was there and the chair was on the ground and his pen, there was no signs of a struggle at all. It looked like he was taken by surprise.
Yeah. And when they check the cash register, they can see that it is open and all of the bills are gone. And when the store owner arrived, he told police that $300 was missing from the register. Here's the thing. There was only two people working that night, Buddy and the delivery guy. So now detectives go and speak with him.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The pizza delivery guy, he's outside waiting on us. He identifies himself as 24-year-old Ronald Aldridge.
Said that he had been working there for just a couple of days.
And he explains what happened that night. He went out to deliver pizzas and he came back 30 minutes later and he found Buddy Joe dead on the floor. And honestly, we're only 4 minutes into this episode and I would really appreciate it if they stopped saying a pool of blood. I stopped counting after four.
Oh my God.
I was like, guys, we get it. We're 4 minutes in. You've given us the visual. I'm all set with a pool of blood.
Yeah,
Thank you. Pipe
down now, okay? I get it. And they say that Ronald was visibly upset. Now, Ronald is the only witness. So detectives conduct a residue test on him and they find nothing on his hands. Also, he had no prior record. There was nothing to indicate that Ronald was involved. So they have this poor young man who has been murdered and there's no real evidence, no cameras. And so detectives have very little to work with.
Absolutely. They are starting from zero. But like, here's the thing about robberies. Yeah, sure. A lot of robberies take place with a weapon, but it's usually just to scare people.
Yeah.
So it's really curious when an armed robbery turns violent because you're not there to murder someone. You're there to get the money and go. And You definitely aren't going to attack someone from behind who wasn't putting up any struggle. Moreover, if the guy was in the back room with his back to the front, he wouldn't have even been able to identify the perp. So what the heck happened? Why on earth would they have shot poor Buddy?
Yeah, it's very cold-blooded. Now, Buddy's cousin Laura Taylor is here, and she talks about receiving that phone call in the middle of the night.
I was living at my folks' house, and the phone rang in the middle of the night. Heard mother crying. She said, Jay's been murdered. We don't have our Jay anymore. I was 6 years old when Jay was born. He was just precious.
You don't ever anticipate that kind of call, but she tells us Buddy was just a kind, gentle person. He did well in school, loved to have fun, and only days before his murder, Buddy found out he was going to be a father.
Meow. So they push forward to 15 hours after the murder, Monday, January 14th at 3 p.m. when the autopsy was conducted. It's honestly pretty straightforward. The bullet went to the back of his head and had an entry wound but no exit wound, and the bullet was destroyed, but they were able to establish that it was either from a 22 or 25 small caliber handgun. So now they need to look into Buddy to understand who this victim is.
I mean, Buddy had no criminal record. And so they speak with Buddy's friends and family to gather more information. And it turns out Buddy was just a young guy living his life, looking forward to starting a family. He was actually going to marry his girlfriend. They have no idea why anyone would want him dead.
And now we go back to 1960 in Stuttgart, Germany. Have you been anywhere besides Berlin?
I spent the night in Frankfurt.
Oh, you did? I've only been to Cologne. Do you know what Germans are?
German?
Not funny. Germans don't like comedy. Did you know that?
Listen, I hate to make broad sweeping statements about anyone.
They make the statement about themselves.
But I can't imagine a German just like cracking a joke.
Well, I do. I have a German joke. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
How many Germans does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
No time for jokes. Did you fix this light bulb? I made that up myself. I wrote that on the spot. Thank you. Thank you very much. No, it's true. Germans love to say how serious. Every German person I know is like, we are not funny. We're just not funny.
Scheiße.
I mean, is there a funny German person?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
I mean, there's tons of funny Brits and Aussies. Honestly, come to think of it, Italians aren't that funny. They're just aggressive and loud.
No, they just sing-songy.
Great. We're just trying to sweep across every nationality and offend you all. How are we doing?
So it's here in 1960 in Germany that pizza delivery guy Ronald Aldridge was born.
James Aldridge and his wife, Otha Ray, lived in Germany.
James was a non-commissioned officer in the U.S. Army, a staff sergeant stationed in West Germany.
2 years later, James Aldridge was born to James and Otha Ray.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Why did the first kid get a name and the second kid was made the junior? Isn't it usually like the firstborn? Like, were they caught by surprise that they were having another boy? And they're like, oh,
Ellen,
I don't know what we're going to name this guy. I mean, I guess give him my name.
Sweetie, I don't know. What do I look like, a gynecologist? I don't know how these things work.
Doesn't that sound weird? The older son was named Ronald and then the second son was Junior?
Maybe they didn't have too much time. They're like, fuck, just name him after the dad. Or we're just going to name him after me.
We don't have a name on file. I'm just going to write James. And you guys, if it sticks, great. And if it doesn't, we'll change it. Okay? We're just James. Great.
So in 1967, the family moved back to Fort Worth, Texas to settle. And James Sr. retired from the military.
So now we learned that as kids and teenagers, James and Ronald were best friends. They grew up in a really happy and loving home. Whatever Ronald did, James did. But like we've come to find out in this TV show, there's always a naughty one. And Ronald was the naughty one. There's always a quiet one and a naughty one. James stayed out of trouble. He was really smart. He was really kind, had a lot of friends. The way they described Ronald, it seemed like he had some mental health stuff. He was a little bit of a recluse, had trouble socializing. I feel like this would be probably easily diagnosed right now as some kind of personality trait, personality disorder, maybe on the spectrum, neurodivergent of some kind. The way they were talking, I was like, I feel like this is easily diagnosed.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Also, Ronald's daughter, Nadine, is here, and she says, you know, despite anything that happened, there was a lot of love in this family, and both Ronald and James shared a very deep bond.
By 1972, Ronald, who was 12, was being perceived as a loner, someone who was unhappy.
The teacher told my grandparents they found some disturbing notes about Ronald wanting to hurt himself.
Mr. and Mrs. Ulrich were concerned.
Ronald had very much become a loner, and no one really knew how to help him.
And a lot of that hurt he felt towards himself, he was putting out in the world towards others. And his brother. I actually went, oh, because that's very real. Ronald had a lot of control over James, and James kind of did whatever Ronald said. Did you do that with any of your siblings? Were you like a tag-along, not even to Jessica?
Fuck no. My sister was my buddy. My sister and I were like two peas in a pod. When she got to junior high, or like maybe a freshman in high school, I definitely was super protective of her, and it got to the point where it was straining our relationship, so I just backed all the way off. But my two older brothers, I didn't give a fuck about them. I wasn't scared of them. If they fucked with me, I went right to my mom, and she knocked the fool out of them. But then when I got a little older, my sister and I got very, very close again, and she's always been like my buddy, but I was never interested in bossing anyone around.
Because John and Joe, like, Joe literally was John's shadow when they were little.
Aww.
It was really cute. I mean, they were, like, rambunctious and stuff. They weren't incredibly naughty, but, I mean, they, like, definitely fed each other. But they were, I totally get it. So they're a week out of this investigation, and they are no further along than they were the week before. Great job, Fort Worth. But they didn't have surveillance. They really had nothing. They had no leads. They don't have any idea as to what could have happened.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Ford had a tip line. We were requesting information from the public. And then about 3 weeks later, and 3 miles away, another 911 call comes in at Circle K.
And a woman that they refer to as Miss Clendenin says she had gone to the Circle K to pick up her son, 21-year-old Brian Clendenin, who worked there. She walks in to find the place. I know, I'm sorry, I can't help it. But they said, ransacked. Okay.
I know they did.
The place was ransacked. And immediately she was like, something is wrong. She was looking for Brian. She couldn't find him. And that's when she drove to a local business nearby and called the police.
But isn't that so crazy to think? We're dealing with something from 1985. She couldn't even make that call right there. I mean, we joke about it, how when we were young, but this woman had to go to another location to use a phone. That's honestly terrifying.
It is.
And I'm speaking from, I sound like a spoiled brat when I say that, because obviously people have lived hundreds of years without cell phones. It's just not something I could process. I can't even understand that. Also, what is a Circle K? Is it just a convenience store?
You've never heard of Circle K?
I mean, I've heard of it. I've just never been to one.
Yeah, it's like a convenience store. When I was growing up in my neighborhood, we had a Time Saver.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know 7-Eleven.
And I would walk one block away and I would go get a Coke Icy.
We would walk a block away from my grandma's house and get an ice.
Like an Italian ice?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's only one kind of ice.
Okay, I didn't grow up in the same neck of the woods as you, okay?
What are you having, Korean ices? What are you having, Norwegian ices?
I don't know. I don't know your life. Maybe they have ice over there.
You ever have Spanish ice? No, it's an Italian ice.
Okay,
there's only one
down.
Kind of
you
ice,
don't know
and
that.
It's the Italian kind.
You don't know that. Have you ever been to Norwegia?
Norwegia? Tell me where that is on the map.
Norwegia,
where's Norwegia on the map?
Is located in Eastern Europe.
You broke up there, honey. Where is it?
Eastern Europe.
Oh, okay.
It's beautiful over there.
It's gorgeous. Lots of icebergs. So the cops go into the store. We see the crime scene photo. And there was change all over. It just looked like there had been a struggle. Everything was a mess. And they turn the corner and there was a victim lying on the ground who had also been shot in the head. But he was still breathing. His hands were tied behind his back with electrical cords. So they obviously rush him out to get life-saving help. His mom sees him, oh my gosh, and identifies him, that poor woman. And they rush him to the hospital and then they proceed to process the crime scene.
Now, y'all, this is very dark and tragic, but I do have to take a moment to acknowledge something here. I believe we have found Bobby Lynn McDaniel's brother.
Oh.
Just listen to this voice.
We then began to process the crime scene.
Tell me that does not sound like Bobby Lynn.
Speaking of Bobby Lynn, someone actually brought up a really good point that didn't cross my mind, and I'd actually like to talk to you about it right now.
Okay, go for it.
Why don't you ever speak up when Bobby Lynn is here attacking me?
I wouldn't characterize it as an attack so much as...
I'm sorry, you're defending her? That wasn't my question. My question was, you get real, real quiet when she's around.
Yeah, I tend to just go to the bathroom or like go get
every time. She's stopped in 100 times.
Yeah, I'll go get a bubbly water. So I don't always hear what's happening. I'm not sure what's happening. I didn't know she was verbally attacking you.
I mean, she's aggressive. She is relentless.
Mm.
And she's hurtful.
Okay.
And you're my best friend and you're never there to defend me or tell her that she's wrong or tell her to stop. And I guess it's getting to the point where I feel like you're a co-conspirator.
You know, that's so interesting that you should say that because, you know, you're never around when Sharon Bag of Bones shows up.
That's not true.
Uh-huh.
And you work hard, baby, but the internet works harder. The internet will find times where I am absolutely there defending Sharon.
Oh, yeah, you are definitely defending Sharon. You definitely are.
I'm just saying. Anyway, yes, I'm loving the accents in this episode.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
So... along the lines of the last tragedy, again, the cash register was empty. Seemed like another robbery. No evidence, no shell casings, no surveillance. And it seems the same, but there's nothing that directly links the two. But again, why are these burglaries turning into murders? Take the fucking money and go. What are you doing?
Yeah, and they look into Brian Clendenin. He had no criminal record, nothing that suggested he was involved in anything nefarious. And Brian's mother, this broke my heart. It absolutely broke my heart. She told police, "My son is a good kid. The only reason he got this job at the Circle K was to help bring in more money for our family, and now he's in the hospital fighting for his life."
Yeah.
Brian never regained consciousness.
On February 5th, 2 days after being shot, Brian succumbed to his injuries. An autopsy was performed on Brian McLennan.
It was confirmed that he had one single gunshot wound to the back of the head.
The medical examiner was able to get a 25 caliber slug from Brian's skull.
That's all the evidence we had, really, at that point.
And just like the Krusty Pizza shooting, there still wasn't a lot of evidence other than the fact that they were both performed with a small handgun. That is all these investigators have to go on.
But that doesn't stop them from asking, are these murders connected? I mean, the manner in which these two men were murdered was very similar. Both involved robberies, possibly the same type of gun. But one thing police knew was that if this is the same person, they are not going to stop until they get caught.
And just as fast as you can say, tumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen and then pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come alive, there was another armed robbery on February 7th. And this time it was at a Pizza Hut.
A witness says that two black men wearing ski masks came in, pulled out a 25 caliber, and robbed the place. They took the money and then they left. So now we're 2 weeks in since the very first robbery and murder. And now we have 3 robberies and 2 murders.
Thank goodness no one was injured or killed, but they're still trying to piece this together.
Yeah. And then over the next month, there was something like 10 armed robberies in this area of South Fort Worth that rarely saw these types of crimes.
Right. And obviously this person or persons who think that they can get away with it, because they are getting away with it. So why would they stop? They haven't been questioned. There's nobody on their tail. They're always hitting convenience stores, fast food places, and they're mostly happening on or around midnight. And if there were witnesses to any of the robberies, they were all very consistent and pretty similar as well.
It was very frustrating. We didn't have any information to go on.
We began putting additional squad cars on the street in that part of the city.
Offer of reward money for information, but unfortunately, nobody's talking.
We knew we had to do something quickly or more people were going to die.
Here's the thing. How on earth did they solve crimes without surveillance footage?
I thought about this. It's wild because we live in the digital age now. I mean, you can't take a shit without ending up on TikTok.
There are cameras outside that just belong to the city that don't even belong to an establishment. The 80s were wild. We moosed our hair. We wore LA Gear sneakers. We drank New Coke and listened to Duran Duran, and it was lawless. Do you know what else about the 80s? You know that the TV just ended at like 1 a.m.? Like,
did it really?
Like, TV stations were like, we're done showing you shit here, so here's some stripes to stare at until 5:30 tomorrow morning. Like, TV would just end.
Oh, it's like in the Poltergeist movie, where you hear, and the home of the brave. And it's just snow.
I mean, do you think I've seen the Poltergeist movies?
You really are missing out. They're great. The first one is so good.
Honestly, I've lived my life perfectly fine without it. I'm not going to start now. But the 80s were wild. There was no surveillance, like nothing. It's just so weird to put your brain there, especially when you're talking about these cases. Like, where on earth do you start?
All I can say is thank God TikTok was not around when we were in junior high school, because we would have been bullied ruthlessly.
You all, speaking of bullied, have you ever seen two grown adults walking down the streets of St. Louis singing the finale to Rent? Well, if you were in St. Louis about a week ago, you would have. And those two buffoons were the buffoons in your ears right now. We are embarrassing.
Nah. Also, it was Chicago, but who cares? So what?
You're right. It was Chicago.
So what? Listen, who cares? You got to do it. Life is short. Make yourself happy. You want to sing the finale of Rent? Go ahead and sing it.
Go ahead and sing all the parts between the two of you. Wait, and then tell them what Harris said.
Harris saw us in the morning and she goes, were y'all singing in your hotel room last night? We're like, yes, why? She goes, I could hear it. Y'all were caterwauling. I'm like, we literally were up till 1 a.m. trying to remember the lyrics to the finale from Rent. And so we just put it on and sang along.
Yeah, no big whoop. Also, how did we sound, Harris? Were we good? That's all I care about. Did I hit the big note at the end? That's all I want to know.
Also, I didn't think about how we might be scaring the people who were staying in the hotel room, because that finale includes, anyone help? You know, no one wants to hear someone screaming help from another hotel room.
So all of these robberies have happened. There have been two fatalities. I mean, there were others that weren't, thank goodness, but they also know whoever is out there doing it is absolutely capable of murder. You want to catch someone who's stealing, but dealing with someone that will absolutely end a life for $300 for sure raises the stakes.
Absolutely. There is definitely a sense of urgency here.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Now we hit March 25th, 1985, 10 weeks after the first murder. It's 12:15 a.m., and Sharon Burns, who is here, tells us that she was working the overnight shift at Whataburger.
It was a little bit after midnight. There was hardly anybody there. There was three people. They were sitting over at a booth by the front door. There was a customer at the counter, and my co-worker, Melvin, was taking the order. I was at the grill cooking up a couple hamburgers.
Okay, I've never had Whataburger, but it is absolutely spelled Whataburger, right?
Yes.
But people say Whataburger, and I hear Whataburger. I hear a burger engulfed or in water or in, I hear Whataburger.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I wouldn't.
It's Whataburger. Whataburger.
Yeah.
Like Whataburger.
Who knows? Listen, let people live. They want to call it Whataburger, let them call it Whataburger.
They're good, right? I've never had one.
I've never had Whataburger either.
Isn't it a Southern thing?
It is, but I've never had Whataburger.
Oh, God, we're going to get emails. So the three stoners in the booth who are, I mean, how good is a frickin' burger when you are stoned or drunk? Get in my belly now. And she was cooking and she hears glass break. And before she could say, because I saddle up on my horse and I ride into the city, I make a lot of noise because the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway, my old stud Leroy and the girls say, save a horse and ride a cowboy. She has a gun in her face.
Yeah, she looked out and she sees Melvin and that customer who was giving their order with their hands up. And one of the robbers jumped over the counter, points the gun in her face, and she's thinking, oh my fucking God, this guy is gonna kill me.
And then, before she can even react or understand what's happening, a woman from that corner table screams, they shot my friend. Melvin hands over the money, and the robber jumps back over the counter, knocking off the cash register, and Sharon hits the alarm and calls the police. That poor woman, just everything happening so fast.
And trying to process it in real time, like, what is happening? Is this really happening?
About 30 minutes after midnight, call comes in that a robbery had occurred at the Whataburger and that someone had been shot.
We find a pretty chaotic scene there and immediately located a deceased victim.
When I entered the Whataburger, I saw a young female victim, appeared to be a teenager, lying on the floor, had a large gunshot wound to the center of her chest, a lot of blood.
It was close range, and they believed a shotgun was involved. That is extremely violent.
It's just so unnecessary. So now they're like, oh my gosh, there was two guns because the gun pointed at Sharon and then the gun used to kill the victim. The victim was 19-year-old Carla McMillan Otto. And these poor kids just saw their friend die in front of them. There's broken glass everywhere. And her dad was a sheriff's deputy. And the poor thing wanted to be a nurse. And she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. It is so senseless.
It absolutely is. And also the police who arrived on the scene are thinking, holy fuck, that is a sheriff deputy's daughter. This could happen to any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two friends tell the police what transpired. They are obviously trying to choke back tears as they tell the story. They were sitting in the booth enjoying their meal when they say three black males entered the restaurant, none of them wearing masks. Two of them had pistols and had approached the counter, and one of them shot the glass door from the inside. Then they say another man jumped over the counter and was rifling through the register. Side note, they only stole
$140. $140.
The third suspect was armed with a shotgun.
He approached the booth where Carla and her friends were sitting.
He had a black bag that he threw down, demanding Carla to fill it up.
And then she put her hands up. She said, I don't have any.
I was like, where do you think you are? Atlantic City? You're sitting in a Whataburger in Fort Worth, Texas. What do you mean fill it up? She's a teenager. She puts her hands up and she says, I don't have anything. And he shot her.
Yeah.
It all happened so fast. But like, what did he think she was going to fill it up with? Like, Hubba Bubba? What on earth? Like, No. Where do you think you are, sir?
No, it is wild. This man clearly is just wanting to kill people in cold-blooded murder. And so when he shoots Carla, all three men sort of scramble and run out of there. And that's when the cash register was knocked over. So the description of the suspects in this scenario, they're not great. But
right.
Melvin, who was taking that customer's order, says, I absolutely 100% recognized that man with the shotgun.
Melvin is a down bitch if I have ever seen one, because his information is clutch. He says, I worked at Domino's with that guy. I know that guy's name with the shotgun. His name is Ronald Allridge. So then they do a background check on Ronald Allridge. So turns out Ronald Allridge was arrested as a juvenile. He was arrested in a case involving murder. But if you'll also remember, he was the delivery guy at Krusty's Pizza, the guy who called 911. So my question is, what the fuck background check were you running the first time that you said he didn't have a criminal record? Were you looking in different places? Were you in a card catalog? Did you spell his name wrong? Did you not look the first time? How the fuck did you come up with this very important piece of information this time, but the first time, no, he's all good. We let him go. He doesn't have gun residue and no criminal record. What the fuck is going on in Fort Worth, Texas?
And the story behind this murder is wild.
On April 13th, 1976, there was some kind of altercation between Ronald and a fellow freshman named Lorenzo Neelan.
A lot of people, they're saying it was over a girl. Other people say Lorenzo was bullying Ronald. So my dad takes his gun to school one day.
But Ronald took that gun and shot Lorenzo dead. He was arrested. He took a plea deal, which came with a manslaughter charge and a 10-year sentence.
So while he was away in prison, Brother James was thriving. He was in school, his grades got better, his social skills got better, he was having a blast. He was like, fuck, that guy's out of my way. He kind of was living his best life without Ronald in the picture. Well, that all ended in 1983, after Ronald only served 7 years. I have several questions about that. And he was back home, and James's life kind of changed.
Yeah, Ronald's daughter, Nadine, is back, and she says that when Ronald returned home, seeing his brother James doing so well did not inspire Ronald to do better. It inspired him to turn James into him. And because Ronald was such a polarizing figure in James Jr.'s life, it changed everything. Mm-hmm. James was back to doing what his big brother told him to do.
Right.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And so they're putting the pieces together, right? They're like, wait a minute. Ronald Allridge was at the Krusty's night. So he's in 2 places where there have been murders. Yeah. And when you all said he had no criminal record, that's on you, motherfuckers. So now, is he responsible for these armed robberies? Because here's the thing, nothing links them except for the similarities in location, all being fast food places and things like that, the time of day they all occurred, and the fact that they all occurred with a small handgun, except for the Whataburger also had the added shotgun. More on that later. Well, Down Bitch Melvin's statement about identifying Ronald was enough probable cause for them. They're like, well, we ain't gonna get much else, so let's go with that one. That's an eyewitness account. And they start preparing the arrest warrant.
Yeah, they had Ronald's address because he gave it to them at the scene of the Krusty's Pizza murder.
We got a couple of detectives to go out to that address. It was an apartment on Hildering Drive. At 10:30 in the morning, the detectives that were surveilling the apartment observed the brown 72 Chevrolet pull into the complex.
So at 10:30 a.m. in the morning, several detectives arrive at his apartment to scope the situation out, and they see a man pull up in a brown 1972 Chevrolet. He walks into the management office and then goes into Ronald's apartment. Now, they have a description of Ronald, and this is not him. So detectives decide to go into that management office, and they say, hey, who was that guy? And he is identified as Ronald's younger brother, James Allridge,
who was made a junior, even though he was the second son. They knew all about that part.
Yep.
They were like, we don't know what's going on in their family. Usually it's the first, I know, but it was James. He's the second. He's the younger. He's the nice one. So they check James's criminal record. Nothing. But they still think he was involved. And they go and glance inside of that Chevrolet, and in the back seat was a shotgun. Really, my guy? You're gonna be that messy? You're just gonna willy-nilly leave a shotgun in the back of the car like that? Like, I'm not advocating for criminals to be smarter by any means, but are we just gonna be incredibly dumb in this scenario? This just made their job so much easier.
Yeah, I did not understand that at all. The carelessness in which they just, oh, I'll just throw it in the back seat, tells me how careless they are with the crimes they commit. And that's enough for police. They take one look at that shotgun in the backseat of the car, and they're able to issue a warrant for his arrest as well.
So now they have Ronald and James, but there definitely were three people at the Whataburger murders. So law enforcement goes to their apartment, they announced themselves and went in and found Ronald in bed. And he went with police. He did not resist. He was like, okay, let's do this. Let's not make a scene. My brother went into the management office to try and get us better rent. Please, I'll go with you. The other room in the apartment was locked. So they spoke to someone through the door, and it was James. And they were like, James, just come out. It's done. The jig is up. Let's not make a scene. So he unlocked the door and they apprehended James.
Ronald was only 24 at the time, and James Jr., only 22.
We searched the apartment at the time of arrest and found a lot of evidence.
We found a .22 caliber pistol in Ronald's room. And a .25 caliber semi-automatic handgun was sitting on the nightstand in James's room.
There's a lot of willying and a lot of nillying in this. But, you know, it's true because we see this all the time when criminals get comfortable and then they start to make stupid mistakes, which, good on them. Thank you so much. But remember in Pink Collar Crimes, the mom who was like, I didn't even care anymore. I wasn't even wearing a mask. And you just get sloppy.
Yeah. They also go to that 1972 Chevrolet and they retrieve the shotgun that they are pretty sure was used in the Whataburger murder. There was a spent round in the chamber and some active rounds.
And the gun matched the murder weapon of poor Carla McMillan Otto. So they questioned Ronald, explained he was a suspect, and he was like, no, I don't want a lawyer. I just, like, let's just talk about this man to man. I'll tell you exactly what happened. I don't need a lawyer. It's totally fine. And he was like, actually, it was four people, not three people. For sure, my brother. My brother was definitely involved. Write that down. And also another set of brothers called Clarence and Milton Jarman. And he was like, also, I am not the one who shot Carla. It was one of the Jarman brothers. And they're like, are you sure? He's like, oh, yeah, I didn't shoot him. And they're like, okay, nice try. We literally have an eyewitness that identified you with your first and last name. How about you spill the beans?
And that is when Ronald turns on the waterworks. Not because he feels bad, but because he has been caught. And he finally confesses to shooting Carla. And then he gives them the details of that evening. At midnight, the night before, on March 25th, the two sets of brothers had been driving around looking for a place to rob. Ronald says, I had the shotgun. The Jarman brothers both had .25 caliber automatic pistols. Ronald was pointing the gun at Carla, and he says that when he heard the cash register fall over and hit the ground, it startled him, and he accidentally pulled the trigger, killing Carla. He didn't intend to kill her.
Right. But you were pointing a fucking gun at her? Okay. So, great. That makes total sense. And also, that doesn't line up with the witness account at all. And the cops want you to trust and believe that Ronald was sobbing, not because he was remorseful, but because he was about to get caught and get fucked. And so James was driving the getaway car, and the Jarman brothers were 18 and 19. They had no criminal records. They still lived at home with their mom.
It's true. And James that night was just the getaway car driver. And so police get arrest warrants for the Jarman brothers, and they are apprehended at their mother's house where they lived. Now, in a twist of events, Clarence Jarman is here.
Yeah, he is. And he tells us exactly what goes on that night.
Your boy rolled over on y'all.
Yeah. Ronald sold him out. Ronald was like, I'll give you names, first and last, and addresses.
Not just that, he tried to pin Carla's murder on them.
And the Jarman brothers were really cooperative. He's like, you know what? We don't even know Ronald that well. We met him like 6 or 7 months ago, right before the incident happened. They were all working at the same convenience store. They admitted to being part of the robbery, and they also fired the gun that broke the glass. But the shots weren't at anyone. They were just to like scare people and get attention. And they also had absolutely no idea about what Ronald was capable of.
They had no idea he had intentions of murdering someone. And so when they took off in that getaway car, Clarence Jarman asked Ronald, why the fuck did you shoot that poor girl? And Ronald says this.
When we got back in the car, the first thing I asked Ronald was, why did you do that? And his first response was, you didn't know the why do you care? And I said, man, you just shot the girl in cold blood.
I mean, if you're a kid and you don't understand the ramifications of holding up a Whataburger or robbing a place, you know, you think, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to scare somebody. They got off with $143 divided by four. That's not a lot of dollars.
Yeah, you're confusing Bobby Lynn with what they took. Bobby is
Wait,
still.
Wait, did I say 143?
You sure did. Bobby is looking for 143.
I had no idea. I just said that.
Nope. $140.
That literally just rolled off my tongue.
What is that? That's $35 each.
Yeah. But here's the thing. That's wrong. Armed robbery is wrong. You could be a stupid kid and do something really stupid, but he's like, this just became super real.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And now Cowboy Kurt Brennan is back being a cowboy detective boy. Cow, and he's like, hey, we meet again, Ronald. We met outside Krusty's. Remember that?
Oh, and Ronald recognized him immediately.
Well, you can't miss Kurt Brennan.
No,
he
you
is
can't.
The archetype of a cowboy.
/ Buffalo Bill. And so Detective Kurt says, tell me more about Buddy Joe Webster. And Ronald agrees to talk. He says the night of the murder on January 13th, Ronald was at Krusty's Pizza to make a delivery. He saw that Buddy was counting cash in the back, seized that opportunity, grabbed his .22, walked behind Buddy, and shot him dead. He then took the cash, left, and made that delivery thinking that surely someone will find him by the time I return. No one did. And that is when that piece of shit called the police and put on a whole song and dance.
And washed his hands, because remember, there was no gun residue, so clearly he knew something. He just wanted that money.
It's cold.
It's awful and unnecessary. Take the money and go. Why are you going to take that poor kid's life? So they're like, well, tell us about Brian Clendenin. And he was like, yeah, I was there, but my brother killed Brian. And James admits to his involvement, and James takes us through the story of the murder of Brian Clendenin.
According to James Ulrich, on the night of February 3rd, he and Ronald went down to the Circle K with the intention of robbing it. James Ulrich told us that they chose the Circle K because James had one time worked at that Circle K. According to James, Ronald was pushing him to do his first robbery.
So James says when we arrived, it was already closed. So James knocks on the front door. Brian sees James, recognizes him, and lets James inside.
Oh, when they said that, I was like, I need a hot dog and a joint. What is happening?
It's terrible. And that's when James immediately pulled out his gun and managed to tie Brian up, placing him on the floor of the back room. James then took the cash from the register. Side note, what idiot robs someone they know? So fucking stupid. So James goes back to the car, and immediately his brother asks, did you kill him? And James says, no. And so Ronald responds by calling him a fucking chicken and telling him, you go in there and you kill him. So James goes back inside, puts Brian on his knees, and murders him execution style. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah. So the two brothers confessed to the three murders of three innocent people. In total, it was 13 violent crimes. It was three murders and 10 armed robberies. And the Jarman brothers are convicted of armed robbery. Clarence Jarman was sentenced to 20 years behind bars. Milton was sentenced to 30 because he had a prior record. And Ronald Allridge is indicted for the murders of Carla McMillan and Buddy James Webster. And then James is indicted for the murder of Brian Clendenin. They dropped the robbery charges. I mean, I get it. Even though that's horrible, obviously they need to focus on the loss of life. You all, even though they confessed and they mapped it out and they told them what they were wearing and eating and doing that night, they pled not guilty. Cue music. What the fuck are you both doing? You have taken lives. You have scarred and traumatized people. You have taken money that wasn't yours. And now we're going to fucking deny it and waste everybody's time pleading not guilty? No, you already said you did it, you fucking garden tools.
They got some bad advice from their lawyers.
Ronald and James, they were tried separately.
For Ronald and James, we were seeking the death penalty.
So in September of 1985, Ronald goes to trial for Carla's murder. His defense, it was an accident. He didn't mean to pull that trigger. I got startled when that cash register fell, and that's what happened. I would love to know what his excuse was for the murder of Buddy, but they don't tell us. But I will tell you this. The jury was not buying that shit, and he received the death penalty for the murder of Carla McMillan Otto. Ronald was not tried for Buddy's murder, but his family was satisfied with the sentence he received.
Yeah, I found that really interesting because obviously he was already getting life in prison without parole. If the family says they're satisfied, that's fine. But I felt bad that his murder didn't get justice. But maybe his family didn't want to go through the trial, and I respect that. Just in my heart, I want him to be accused for the murders that he committed, you know? But if the family feels like they got justice, then that's all that matters. But I still was like, he needs two life sentences.
Yeah, I agree. Well, in March of 1987, brother James was found guilty of capital murder in the Brian Clendenin case and also received the death penalty. So on June 8th, 1995, Ronald's sentence was carried out and he died by lethal injection. And on August 26th, 2004, James Aldridge was also executed by lethal injection at the age of 41. And it's just, it's so sad because so many people are affected by these murders. The victims' families, Buddy's unborn child, the woman he was about to marry, Ronald's daughter, Nadine, who was only 10 when her father was executed. She had no idea why. She looked into it and found out all the things that he did, and that must have been so traumatic for her. Also, Carla and Brian's families. I mean, just...
And those kids who were in the Whataburger with her. The ripple effect is so devastating.
Buddy Webster, Brian Clendenin, Carla McMillan Otto, all of them were out in the world just trying to make it, and this senseless violence took their lives. And, you know, I don't think the families can ever get over something like that.
Well, I have a lot of side research. I have a lot of things I want to ask you about. First of all, Ronald's defense that it was an accident. There was an expert witness for the prosecution by the name of Frank Sheeler, and he said that 4 pounds of pressure was needed to pull the trigger on Ronald's shotgun. That is not a, what do they call it? A hairline trigger? What do they call it?
Yeah, something like that.
No. Try again, pal. Like, you're already serving a life sentence. That's bullshit. Do not disrespect her by saying that it was an accident, because it wasn't. You had to put 4 pounds of pressure on that shotgun to make it go off. Now, I want to talk about James for a second. I really went in on this one. And, you know, on Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case, I have another podcast. I don't know if you knew that.
I know.
There are things that Rabia and I really differ on in terms of incarceration. In terms of the death penalty, I'm very torn on the death penalty. When it comes to children, I really have no patience. But I also want to point out that when Ronald was executed by lethal injection, he declined his last meal and he asked if he had any last words. Ronald replied, "No, I'm not going to say anything." Okay. When James was executed, his last meal consisted of a cheeseburger and a bunch of fries and things like that. When he was asked for his last words, these were his last words. Quote, "Yeah, I want to thank my family and my friends, my family for all loving me and giving me so much love. I am sorry. I really am. You, Brian's sister, thanks for the love. It meant a lot. Shane," that was Brian's brother, by the way, "I hope you find peace. I'm sorry I destroyed y'all's life. Thank you for forgiving me. To the moon and back, I love you all." Okay. It is unclear whether or not Brian's family actually did forgive James. More on that later. I tried reaching out to Shane and I haven't heard back. But I do want to talk about James because in 1987, after James Allridge was found guilty of Brian's murder, the jury assigned to the trial had one of two choices. And before 1990, this was how the determination was to be made in the state of Texas. There were two questions asked and two questions alone. And if the jury answered no to either question, it's done. First, they were asked, "Do you think the crime was deliberate?" And second, "Did they believe beyond a reasonable doubt that there is a probability that Allridge would commit additional acts of violence in the future, making him a continued threat to society?" Those are the only two questions that were asked of the jury at the time. And I also am confused why the only two choices were life in prison with the possibility of parole after 20 years or the death penalty. It wasn't life in prison with no parole. That was never on the table. That is very confusing to me. So I was looking into James because we learned that a lot of what made James, quote, a bad guy was his brother. And I found this really compelling article by Jordan Smith from the Austin Chronicle in 2004, because James had a very highly publicized and a massive appeal for clemency. James's supporters, including four original jurors, his family, attorneys, two former death row prison guards, a retired prison system administrator, a Fort Worth city councilman, and one of Allridge's former employees and a couple of others joined forces to ask for an official pardon. And I'm going to read just a section right from the article. "Allridge's bid for a life sentence is not based on a claim of innocence or a lack of due process. Instead, his plea for commutation. This is based on his apparent rehabilitation while in prison and his quest for redemption. Two factors that Allridge's supporters, criminal justice reformers, and policymakers say should play a key role in Texas's clemency decisions, especially since the state's capital statute emphasizes, as did in Aldridge's sentence to death row, quote, future dangerousness. We ask that you consider whether the interests of the criminal justice system, including deterrence and rehabilitation, are best served by executing a rehabilitated person who, while carrying the responsibility and remorse for his actions in his heart, is trying to give something back by furthering the safety and stability of the prison environment and struggling to redeem himself. In the 17 years he was in prison, he was a model inmate, and he accepts responsibility for Clendenin's murder and strives for redemption in behavior that he models for other inmates. He is a calming force on the row, and former guards say he has made the unit a safer place. He has honed his writing skills, teaches other inmates to read and write, and has taught himself to paint and draw. In fact, his art, which is primarily bright colors and highly professional render, has been featured in art shows across the country and in Europe. Art is a symbol of rehabilitation, a tangible and graphic example of the man he has become. And it is quite natural that when people get out of a certain environment, they change. Although the question of whether the defendant possesses a continuing threat to society, both inside and outside prison, it is integral to deciding a death sentence in Texas where rehabilitation has not played a correspondingly significant role in deciding clemency. Oh. Allridge did not claim that his rehabilitation somehow erases the tragedy that was visited upon the Clendenin family. Rather, their argument is that in order to maintain the integrity of the state's death penalty system and to ensure that the ultimate punishment is reserved for the most egregious crimes and irredeemable offenders, the system must demonstrate moderation and mercy. I'm really choked up by this because I think that Ronald was a sick fuck. I think he was not well. He was not taken care of. He killed people in cold blood. What they were saying was, we're not saying he needs to be set free. Just please don't sentence him to death, because that's what we want. We want to reduce recidivism. We want to teach people to be better. That is ultimately what people who fight against the death penalty is for, right? And this man was an example of it. I am in no way excusing or giving my blessing to what he did to that family. But this is a changed man. And I don't believe everyone is capable of change. You know, Robbie and I talk about it all the time. I mean, if you hurt children, if you molest children, if you sexually assault children, you're not fucking changing. There are things that I stand true to, but I think this is a really complicated matter. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, rehabilitation is not implemented into our prison systems in the way that it should be. Do I think he should have been released from prison? I have a hard time with that.
That's not what he was saying.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying for myself. But as far as capital punishment, receiving the death sentence, again, like, it's such a nuanced conversation. I personally don't agree with capital punishment. I don't think we should be playing God. But I've also not been a family victim of someone who was murdered in cold blood. Do I think that people are capable of changing? Yes. Do I think that there are people who are not? Most likely Ronald? Absolutely. But yes, I think that every situation, every person, even looking at ourselves, deserves re-examination, you know?
I mean, looking into the kind of man he became in prison and what he was doing to make a better life in prison, that's why his execution wasn't until 2004, because he had so many people coming to his defense and appealing for him. The ACLU wrote a letter and they were saying he is not taking away what he did, but he actually makes prison a better place. He taught other inmates to read and write.
Yeah.
He was doing the work. And that is what we say we want, because there is research that shows that when people participate in correctional education programs, their odds of returning to prison diminish drastically. Also, if you have a moment, it's funny that we were mentioning Norway, because Norway's criminal justice system is fascinating and really focuses on rehabilitation. I'm just saying, absolutely, you should pay for the things that you do in life. But I don't think this was a man that should have been sentenced to death. Mm. I really don't. I could not stop researching this case last night. I actually texted Maggie and I was like, is this case flagged for you? And she was like, the name rings a bell, but it doesn't. I mean, this was, Maggie was probably born when this all went down because she's a fetus. But anyway, I feel for the family. I believe Ronald was probably a lost cause, but I do believe that it's a very sad story all around.
Well, at the end of the episode, it's actually Buddy's cousin, Laura Taylor, who has the last word. And she says, you know, I know we're supposed to forgive, but I don't know how I can. I'll have to ask the big guy when I get up there. And it really made me start thinking about forgiveness. Because, you know, forgiveness is a gift that we give people who wrong us, but also it's a gift to ourselves, because with forgiveness comes freedom. You emancipate yourself from holding on to pain that really has the power to just filter throughout your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And the path to forgiveness is long, and it's extremely rough terrain to navigate.
Do I have to forgive my dad?
Okay, just let me finish this. But if you can find a way to forgive someone, it doesn't even have to be for them. It can be for yourself. But if you can find a way to do it, you cut the head of that very venomous snake off. It's not easy. Trust me, I know. It's much easier said than done, but I promise you, your future self will thank you.
Do I have to forgive my dad?
Do we have that code for BetterHelp, Harris?
Look at me defending people. Who do I think I am, Rabia Chaudhry? Also, find me on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts for, what's my other podcast name? Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case.
Yes, and find me at a sex party in Brooklyn next month.
Well, we're talking about that on Swamp Talk. Don't forget, if you want to get Swamp Talk, just join the Hallelujah What's It To You tier on our Patreon. We're talking about that.
Okay. And if you're on our Take a Sprite and Leave tier, you get to sit in on the live recording of Swamp Talk, which we're doing tonight at 6:30 p.m.
We're doing it later tonight. tonight. And we hope to see you all on tour. Don't forget to follow us on social media. We're at I Think Not Pod on TikTok and Instagram. And you can find us on Facebook, which is where we kind of make all the announcements and ask all the questions. And that is I Think Not Pod discussion group.
You got that wrong. And it feels good to say that.
Okay, my love.
I Think Not Podcast Facebook discussion group.
Okay. Anyway, I love you, Joey.
I love you too, Yellen Martian. I love all you DBs.
Bye.
Ellen was wrong. You said that there was
Ronald Allred is indicted for murder.
Allridge.
I say whatever I have written. Mm. I just say whatever I've written. Ronald Allred is indicted for murder.
Allridge.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.